This is Priestess Nova Star coming at you in wee hours. One day after the 9/11. And I think of those numbers, 9/11. And the first thing comes to my mind is our big mamas. That's right. Big mama. Big mama. My daughter's talking in her sleep and she responded. talking about assignments due. that's so studious of her. But anyway, the big mamas. That's who this show and many of my shows will be dedicated to. 911. When we was in trouble, who we go to? Mama or our big mamas? I have actually had 3 big mamas that I knew well. And one was named Lala. And she is the mother of my mother, who recently transitioned. And I had the honor of being by her transition bed when she did back in November of 2001. Everybody affectionately referred to her as Lala. And boy, let me tell you, she was in fact a song to sing. Very upbeat, classy, sophisticated, self-educated, caring, thoughtful, loving, protector of a human being, and also spiritual. She had a lot of hurt and she had a lot of pain, of course, because of where she came out of. And she wore it on her sleeve, but at the same time, she'd make up for it in different ways. She didn't have no problems letting you know what her pain, or some of her pain, I should say, was. But she was a very deep, deep, deep individual. And her spirit was beautiful and it was pure. And she always wanted the best for her loved ones. And I ain't never seen a person who had lived, you know, the majority of their life to come into their senior SSI collecting years, Social Security collecting years, and put that money by like my grandmother did. She put that money by, so by the time she passed on, she had saved a chunk of money even for her grandchildren, you know, her grandchildren and her great grands. And I'm telling you, before my mama passed, my mama held on to the money and did right and passed it on down to my children, which would have been my, you know, my grandmother's great great grands. And so this just gives you a idea of her character. Her name was Willa B. Glenn. She was born in Arcadia, Louisiana. And you know, back in those times, 1900s. That's an era, you know, I mean, like, her folks was, working servants to white pink folks, and even her own father was a pink man. And the story has it where she knew her sisters or got to see a few of her sisters, but she couldn't go up around them because that would have been given away. That would have gave away her identity to this pink man's wife. And I'm not really certain if my great-grandmother and this pink man's relationship or whatever the relationship was consensual or not. But what come from out of it was our big mama, Lala. And I know it caused a lot of trauma. That relationship caused a lot of trauma. Because my great-grandmother and my grandmother, when I was a child, I used to see them at odds with each other. And I don't know if my great-grandmother would look at her and be reminded of her daddy, or how she got that baby, or what it was. But I know it made my grandmother very sad, because it seemed like it, you know, she really tried, my grandmother really tried to have a solid relationship with her mother. But every time she would come down from Oakland, she would to Los Angeles, she'd bring a big, huge suitcase with gifts and all and smiles and everything. And the next thing you know, she turned around and be going right back home on that bus. So that's a reason why a lot of my shows, or cast, I should say, is centered, or they have been centered, about pink folks and them making it right. I ain't waiting on y'all again to make nothing right, but just to see how in the family line, the bloodline, how the trauma has been passed by from y'all's interference. And I call it an interference because even though, like my mama told me, she said, "Baby, you be proud and be accepting and grateful to all of your bloodline influences, because that is the makeup of you." Now, ain't nobody over here ignorant. Ain't nobody over here on no race thing and no one-sided thing and none of that shit, because I know that I've been taught properly. And I am upset and accepting of me. But what I am not accepting of is how motherfuckers come over here and think that they can mix and blend and do and all of this shit with my folk and twist all of this shit up. And now we have to do all of this spiritual release work, what we call womb work, because it's, we like an onion with layers and layers and layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of trauma, because we come from the wombs of the wombs of the wombs of the wombs that was affected by colonization. So despite of my Lala's tears, and another thing, she drank very heavily. And as a child, I witnessed a lot of it and the dissension she had with my grandfather, problems she had with my mama, problems she had with her own kinfolk that would come and visit, because it was like she wanted you there and she was lonely a lot of the times, and you know, she wanted you there, but then once she started drinking, you'd be running for the dough. And she started getting volatile. And them spirits raised up in her. And them spirits had to do with that motherfucking daddy of hers. And I'm not going to put all my grandmother's business out here in the world. But there's so many, you know, similar stories, if not head-on stories, of women. Back in the days, my Lala, she could pass. Her and her cousin that's still with, they was born in Arcadia, and they go all up in different regions in Louisiana and, you know, go shopping with the pink folks and would never be questioned, because they had that hair, they had the skin, they had the mannerisms. Shit, they studied the mannerisms and could emulate. And that's where all of that shit come from. Passing. And you got it today. You got a nigger's girl that can go in and get the job just because she could change her voice to sound like corporate America, or to sound like, a pink woman's voice, a pink woman. So we know all of this, you know, what they call talking proper, you know, or that corporate ass bullshit talk. But hey, it's business, and a lot of folk assimilate to that particular, I don't know if I even want to call it a dialect, it's just, you know, that way of speaking. But anyway, I just, you know, raised me up out of my quickening, and I said, wow. I just started just looking at old notes I've taken and just going through scenes in my mind about particular things. And my grandmother, she's an awesome woman. She had an old brick barbecue out in the back. And I remember maybe about a couple of years to a few years before she took ill, we fired that barbecue up for her last time. I didn't realize at the time that had been the last time me and my grandmother would have been barbecuing with one another. And Lord, she had peach trees, banana trees, she had nectarines, lemons, grapevines, strawberry bushes. She comes from that energy, from that sharecropping energy. So my daddy just said last night, you know, she inspired him so much, you know, to plant, even though his family, the same thing. There were certain things that she would plant that he didn't know nothing about certain peas from down south, because my father is from Watts, California. He wasn't a country boy. His grandfather and father was, but he wasn't. And so when he met my mama and met my grandmother and my mother's mother taught him a lot about Southern practices and tradition. And she would bring all these peas back when she would go home to Louisiana. She would bring all of these seeds and peas and things and cotton seed and just a lot of things back from Louisiana. Nevertheless, she just is a beautiful, beautiful spirit. And I remember her dresser in her room was covered with, you know, all these beautiful little porcelain shoes. That was a lotion bottle, and just her vanity and her brush with her hair in it. And I remember her black comb and her brush and her Chantilly lotion. Just like all these different things she had that was so pretty. Her towels. I remember she had caught this bumblebee, and she enclosed it in some kind of a way in a jar, and she had it sitting by the corner of the bathtub. And I remember every time I would take a bath as a child, I'd always be looking back at that jar like, is that bumblebee gonna come alive? And it's just things, you know. I remember her brass bed she had in the guest room, and all her antiques and marble coffee table and the plastic on her furniture. And when we was coming up, she didn't believe in cutting down Christmas trees, so she'd take the long tinsel string and make a Christmas tree up on the wall and pin it to the wall with Christmas cards all in it. And just, she was creative, you know, and conscious at the same time. She didn't believe in cutting no damn no tree cut down, and she didn't want none to fake up in her house and all of that. So we would play bingo and Monopoly and Yahtzee. And she must have been at least like in her 60s, late 50s and 60s when I was coming up, 8, 9, 10 years old. And she had that youth about her. She'd get down in the middle of the floor and play games, board games with us. And she was a gambler too. And she played pit-pat and dominoes and rummy and tonk and bid whisk. And she loved them cars. And she was known to send a domino via her toe underneath that table too. And she might tuck one on you. But it's funny. I remember her tea kettle. I remember smothered chicken, hot water cornbread, fried green tomatoes and fish. I especially remember one funny story I remember about Lala, because I always would roll her hair. She and my mother's hair. And I was taught how to roll hair with magnetic rollers by my auntie, my TT Helen. She had a beauty shop down Central and 79th. What they call South Central today in Los Angeles. And she did very well for herself. She's an entrepreneur. I had never really known my auntie, my mother's sister, Helen, even hold no job. When I was coming up, she was her own business owner. And so was my grandmother. I'll get back to that story, but my grandmother, she had, not only did she have a bookie joint, she had a record shop, she had a store, and she brought commercial property and she lived in it, right on Imperial and Avalon in Los Angeles, what they call South Central right now today. And back in those days, things were flourishing. We're talking about the 50s. And they came out here in 43 from Louisiana. So it did not take her long to see how things worked out here. And she got on in it. And she also tried to teach her daughters. Because I remember my mother telling me about her working at a record shop. And that's how, you know, she and my dad met on the premise of music, bebop, because my father taught her about so many of the bebop artists, so that she could go down to a particular place where they sold records, I believe, like wholesale or what have you, and bring them records up back to the neighborhood to sell to their customers. And so she, you know, My grandmother played them horses, and she knew how to keep money. She was a hustler. And I know it ain't never not no day we would go over there, you know, where she would be like, she'd be like, well, I don't have much, baby. But she'd be pulling all kind of stuff out of her refrigerator and her freezer. I done froze some strawberries. Oh, you want some strawberry ice cream? She put the frozen strawberries on there, and she pulled a glass down, and it make you feel like you at the damn ice cream shop. special person that did special things for us, you know, her grands and great grands. And so back to the story. So I was rolling her hair one day and was on the bed, and she's the type of person where, you know, she watched her game shows and she wanted me to go on these different game shows for kids. I think the game show was out back then was like Joker's Wild, and they would have like a little dedication to kids in the summertime. And she'd be like, I don't know why your mama, I keep telling your mama to put you on that game show, and you smart enough, you shit the ass, look at them kids and they answering them little questions, you know, all this little stuff that they asking. And you could win some money and put by for school. And I'd be like, dang, I want to go on there. But, you know, but mama would never, like, I guess. She didn't push that line. So we were sitting up there on the bed, and I was rolling her hair. She was watching her game show. And so I was like, well, okay, let me get this hair rolled. So I pulled one of the rollers out, and there was the yellow rollers, you know, probably about like by an inch in diameter or whatever. And so she used the paper. It was like this rolling paper for hair, and you fold that rolling paper across that hair, and you bring it down just so. After you have brushed that hair and combed that hair, make sure that hair was free of kinks, and you put that paper across there, and then it's a way you roll it up with that paper on that hair. I never knew what the hell that paper was for, but it must have been something to help the curl. It must have been to help the curl, but anyway. It's just funny because I picked up one of them rollers and the joint fell out of it. And I said, Granny. She said, huh? I said, look at this. She said, what's that? I said, Granny. I said, you got a joint in here? She said, oh, I was looking for that. I died laughing inside. And I just had this big old smile. Like, my grandma was cool as hell. But she, I already knew that, you know, she puffed a little bit, you know. And shit, who wouldn't? Shit coming out of all the shit she came out of. And she used to grow a little bit too. And she always used to tell me as a teenager, she'd say, you know, you be out there and going to parties, you know, you don't be drinking that. After nobody serving, you don't never put your drink down. And cause you know, you just got evil spirits out there, shit. They fucked up. They want you to be fucked up cause they fucked up. And she explained all these things to me. So, you know, I was lucky, you know, I knew that the etiquette when I went out to house parties and clubs and stuff. As I got older, I knew the ins and the outs, how to conduct myself as, you know, a young woman out there. And she always used to say, shit, don't be out in them streets getting high, don't be out in them streets and getting loaded. She said, shit, you come on home, come here, smoke your weeds and your tweeds and things. And so you know, never did, but that just goes to show the type of person she is, because you know, she already knew like what we was about to be exposed to and all of that. So she was just trying to make sure her home was a safe haven for us. And it was. And as time progressed, the quality of the neighborhood started going down, especially in the 80s. Shit, come late, say 70s, I say mid 80s, you started seeing a change on that corner, because she was like right behind a gas station. And she was by herself. She didn't have too much of no man or nothing. But she would always have like suitors or people that would want to be her man. But shit, for some reason, I guess she didn't want to trust it. She just, you know, remained and preferred to be her own individual in her own dwelling by herself. And she wanted company, she had company. And then she sent your ass on once that was done. And so I remember playing cards with her and her friend named Pee-wee. And Pee-wee was a friend of my childhood friend, was an uncle, or like a great uncle to my childhood friend Lori. And I remember I was probably about 8 or 9. I was sitting up there playing cards, and I said some little smart little something, trying to act like I was grown, and she checked me so fast. I remember that at her table. She let me in the card game so that I could learn how to play. And I must have called the man, "Oh, come on, old man, it's your turn or something." She must have looked at me, glared at me like she done whipped my ass with her eyes. Anyway, and checked me in front of him too. And I think I was quiet the rest of that game. But anyway, the energy started changing after so long. And especially when shit went about time Reagan got in the office, please. She was fighting niggas to stay up out of her backyard. Because if they wasn't hopping her gate to get over to the next street over, I mean, she sat up there with it. She sat there at her service porch at the window with her handgun. Shit. And she was like, if one of them start coming, feeling like they coming near her house, they gonna get one. And she wasn't afraid to serve your ass either. She will shoot you. But anyway, she lived in I know it was a lot of fear inside too, because I know once them times start coming, like, because I was born in 70, and I remember as mid-70s, the latter 70s, I might have been 7, 6, something like that, I'd be laying in the bed with her, and I hear that train off in the distance, like 3 in the morning, it's always a train. And if for some reason that train used to just make me shiver inside. And I guess because I was causing it enough back then to know that Grandma was experiencing some little troubles. And that's before bars on the house, because bars start coming up in the 80s, keeping all of the crackheads out your house from robbing you. Shit, before that, you didn't need bars. It wasn't unheard of for a person to get robbed, but not at the level. By the time Reagan got in there, shit, they got the bringing all that contraband and all that cocaine and stuff that was coming from I forget, over there in Colombia and South America, what have you. That's when I was a teenager, and you really had to watch your back. You know, you couldn't leave your home and vacation and all that stuff. And I know she had suffered several robberies, and after that, you know, the bars went up. And it was a really sad time in the 80s, mid 80s, because you saw the whole neighborhood, the community, just like shift into, you know, You had Mexican people, so-called black people, thriving, you know, and working. You had the tamale man down there. You go get hot peanuts, a hot bag of peanuts. Never knew how that man kept them damn peanuts roasted, but they were so good. I remember going down there with my daddy and going and get a dozen of tamales. And this is, you know, and everything was good and quality, and people took pride. And then you start seeing the graffiti going up, and then the gangs coming, and then, you know, the drug dealing and the gangs, and then niggas getting killed and going back and forth over this raw cocaine. And then you seen the family members. Everybody started getting skinny and smoked out looking. That's what we used to call smoked out. And they started stealing from Granny. She had to put bars up for her own damn descendants. See what you did? Shit. Motherfucking Reagan and his cabinet. Motherfucking Queen of England and her bullshit. Genocide in the community. But Grandma, Big Mama, Lala, she kept us as protected as she could from all that bullshit. And kept us focused in our own reality, as well as, you know, because that shit right there was, you know, that affected her, because she ended up having to take care of lots of family members' children that was smoked out, and that was not able to handle their responsibilities because the drug had took a hold of them. And she raising babies up the best that she could, and this is the prime of her life when she's supposed to be having experiences and traveling the world and getting more culture and getting more, you know, things that she wanted to do, things that she had been saving for and all of that. And you know, dedicated her life to continue to save her family line, her bloodline. So I give thanks for my grandmother today, and I will be speaking more about her, as well as my mama, which was my daddy's mother. We call her Bunny Boo. And my great-grandmother as well, Mama Zora, my grandmother Lala's mother, all been tremendous influences and power sources. Even right now, today, I call on them. They make some shit right here in the physical, right and divine and aligned. And I continuously communicate and speak to them. And they are my ritual. And that's something that can't nobody fuck with. Can't nobody take away. Can't nobody manipulate. And that's why, you know, I be warning a motherfucker before they think a negative thought toward me. Not to say that they would, they should, but they could. And if they do, they'll have something on their ass. So, I just give thanks for the power in me, because I am my Aunt Esther, my space-time and existence, my life force. Those spirits live right in the very divine fabric of me and in my DNA memory and my spiritual foundation, base, home, soul, spirit connection, my inner divine inner nigga figure is my grandmother's. And not so much as my pawpaws, but my grandmother's. I didn't know my pawpaws very well, and my other pawpaw, I didn't quite understand him. And I didn't understand him until I got a little older. And he's also, his actions is also off of emulation, influence of you know, Greek society, I should say. But as far as my grandmother's concerned, whatever it is that they took on, you know, or personas, I should say, the eras that they lived through, you know, that's all forgiven. It's all forgiven because they didn't have nothing to work with but what they had to work with. But their foundations were strong, and that's where I'm coming from. I'm coming from out of that energy. So, not the, you know, entertainment industry, what they heard on the radio back then and images they saw and how they dressed and how they tried to, you know, all that passing and all that stuff. Fuck all that shit. That shit is dead when it comes to my spirit and what I subscribe to. I ain't trying to please nah motherfucker. Either you accept me or don't. And I'd rather for you not to and keep the shit real. And so with that, I'm going to end this show. And I give thanks to my listeners for listening. And I got a lot of powerful stories when it comes to my lalas and my grandmothers. And every now and again, you know, I'll make mention or dedicate some time to telling y'all what I feel like I want to. So, appreciate y'all listening. Be well. Take good care.